Thank you, David. As you may know, Merrill Ann Fair has been unable to join us today due to a family emergency. However, the good news is we have an expert who has agreed to pinch hit, if you will. Larry Innes is the Executive Director of the Canadian Boreal Initiative, and I will take a little bit of time to tell you about him since his bio isn't in the program. He is, in fact, a lawyer by training, practicing Aboriginal and environmental law. And as Executive Director of the Canadian Boreal Initiative, he's assisted communities to develop and sustain local capacity for effective environmental management, and he works across Canada with charitable foundations, environmental NGOs, First Nations communities, and progressive industries engaged in boreal forest conservation. He has authored papers on Aboriginal rights and resource development, ecosystem-based management and related issues, and he is involved in collaborative research on sustainable forestry and community-based resource management, and he will be speaking to us about connections between Aboriginal communities and water issues. Thank you.
It's always fun to come to a conference where you're hoping to learn something and find yourself on a stage, hopefully with something to say. But two things have emerged for me, and being a participant up until now has been great. It's reaffirmed that we still, in this country, have a lack of coherence about the best way to manage the water challenges that we're currently facing. But there's a great deal of certainty about the present failures of our federal system to adequately address these challenges. And it's clear that we need a new path. Minister Prentice reminded us of the foundational role that Montreal, this place, played in the history of Canada, and of the foundational role that water, as a network that connected a growing nation, played in our conception of Canada as a nation. But I think if we're going to understand the full extent of the challenge and indeed the opportunity, we have to look at a deeper history. This is Hochelaga. This is the village that Jacques Cartier found in fine form in 1534. And it's also the place in 1701 in which a great peace was signed between the French and 40 indigenous nations who had seen their world turn over with the arrival of Europeans. This is the place where we found the symbol of the two-row wampum, which is, for those of you who don't know it, it's a belt which depicts two canoes traveling the same river together to a common destination. And this is the metaphor of reconciliation, which is, in fact, at the heart of much of our Aboriginal law in Canada today. Because we must remember that our recent history is but a footnote to the 10,000 years that has preceded us in this place. The federalism that is expressed or has been expressed in the conversations today about different levels of provincial or federal jurisdiction over water is not a conception of federalism that First Nations encountering Europeans for the first time as treaty nations would have understood. It's not a conception, indeed, of federalism which is found in our present Constitution, which, of course, has Section 91 and Section 92 dividing the orders of government between federal and provincial entities and the various responsibilities and authorities there, too. But it's also a constitution which has Section 35, which speaks to the recognition and the respect that this country is intending to pay to the rights and titles of Indigenous people and to the treaties that we've signed with them. Our courts have taken this idea of reconciliation in their interpretation, and there's been 30 years of litigation, about what Section 35 actually means. What our courts tell us is that Section 35 is a promise to Aboriginal people in which we will reconcile the preexistence of their existing societies at the time of European contact with the new realities of sharing this land and the assertions of sovereignty by the Crown. This is not Indigenous law, however. Indigenous law is much deeper. It's pre-existing. This is the law of reconciliation. So it's important when we turn to water to look at these two concepts in law and the foundational way in which our ideas about water are shaped by our perspective. The slide behind me describes, on the one side, Western ideas about law, which have been well elaborated in this conference today. But in indigenous law, water is understood to be a giver of life. It's understood to be sacred, it cannot be owned, it must be shared, and no one interest or use can be paramount. And it also contains a very important obligation to respect and protect water for future generations. These two conceptions of laws come out of different histories, and they have led to different policy directions which shape the way in which the societies that apply them have dealt with water. Again, this conference has been very clear that our problems around water, from a Western perspective, are dealing largely with issues of allocation, of dealing with efficiencies of markets in addressing scarcity, on applying self-regulation by users, and indeed, if we look at the last 100 years, perhaps less, of reducing regulatory oversight and shifting burdens from government onto end users. Contrast this with indigenous conceptions, in which self-determination and control over development remain a paramount goal for communities in their dealings, not only among themselves, but with their neighbors, of restoring and maximizing their cultural identity, of maximizing the benefits to the community, to the land itself, that flow from appropriate development, and respecting the idea of intergenerational equity and future generations. If we apply this to the conceptions of water rights that flow from these ideas, we can distinguish between the ownership concept of waterbeds and the exclusive use of water that is contained therein. There's a whole doctrine of law which is being applied in litigation today by the provinces of Alberta and others against the conception of Aboriginal rights in which the concept of a protective limit, the idea that there is a use to which things cannot be put because the quality of life and the sufficiency of one's relationships with others is therefore put at risk. When we consider how these two conceptions of rights and responsibilities relate to each other in water, we'll find that in many places there are conflicts. There are active litigation being brought by the Piikani. Some settlements have been achieved in relation to the water use in Alberta. There is another case that is being brought by the Beaver Lake Cree Nation, which looks at the idea of the guarantees that were made in the treaties, that they would have the right to carry out their way of life forever. The government, the Crown, being granted the right to use the land for settlement and development and to harmoniously coexist. The Beaver Lake Cree are questioning whether you can harmoniously coexist on a land base when the government continues to give out thousands, I think it was 16,000 permits, to oil and gas and forestry companies and other developers on a land base that is somehow supposed to also sustain a spiritual connection to a place that people have lived in for thousands of years and a livelihood which is based on the sustainable use of resources. These are obviously incommensurable ideas, and litigation may give us the last word, but it should not be our first resort. So I return to the possibilities for reconciliation. The Western and Indigenous perspectives are addressing fundamentally different approaches to dealing with water management, and they have given us fundamentally different policy directives and, indeed, different bodies of law on which to draw. So when we consider the possibilities for reconciliation, we should consider the potential of Canada, as recently described by John Ralston Saul in his book A Fair Country, as possibly becoming a Métis nation, in the sense that we have the possibility to build on the best traditions in our Western and our Indigenous histories to define Canada in a unique place in this world. And what better challenge to take that up than in respect of water? There are places that this is being done, and I put on a slide behind you a couple of quotes from the Northwest Territories Water Stewardship Strategy, which is just coming out. And the process in the Northwest Territories of coming up with this vision was one in which communities were listened to first. And some of the ideas and goals reflected on the slide behind me emphasize some of the fundamental points that that largely Indigenous society, existing as part of Canada's Federation, is putting forward. Water is a human right. water stewardship must be made in respect of spiritual, cultural, and recreational ecological values. It must respect and integrate Aboriginal rights, treaties, and land claim agreements, and it is a collective responsibility for now and for future generations. I think this is the new path that we should be pursuing, and thank you very much.